Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly. You're back with episode number 13, Audrey.
I know. That, you know what? It just makes sense. We were just talking about number 13 and how much bad luck we've had with this episode.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've recorded, well, Josh and I haven't recorded, but Tori and I have recorded this now 3 or 4 different times, and not a single one came out. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blaming it on Tori.
Is she cursed?
I think she's cursed.
Maybe just unlucky?
Yeah.
Maybe it'll work for me, because 13 is usually my lucky number.
That's true. It might work this time.
Yeah.
I mean, between we've had bad weather that knocked out our internet, so that was one thing. Then it was just bad luck with my phone. It lost connection for some random reason and wiped out the entire episode. Then we recorded again, and we have the new mics this time. So we're like, great, it'll work great, it'll be perfect, here we go.
Or so you thought.
It did not work out great. So yesterday we celebrated our youngest, his birthday this weekend. And so Tori came over and I was like, let's record it real quick, no big deal. Perfect, we got it. We know how to do it this time. We recorded it, and somebody, I'm not going to say who, switched the settings on the mics when we were trying the new stuff, and we recorded the whole episode with video and no sound. So that's when I gave up. Because like I said, we were celebrating Jackson's birthday. We got sunburnt yesterday. We were tired. I didn't have it in me to do anything else. So that's why we're doing it tonight.
Yep.
So here we are. Lucky episode
13.
So I know you want to do cryptids and aliens and stuff, but you're just stepping in for me since it's been a nightmare.
Yeah.
So we have a murder story for you.
Okay.
It is about Jennifer Morey. I would ask you if you knew that name, but he doesn't know that name.
I don't know that name.
So this episode was actually covered on I Survived on, I think it's on A&E is where it airs most of the time.
So, yeah.
It's a great episode. Insane. I also heard this on a couple of other podcasts. One really good one is Morbid. Before I get into it though, I do want to say, if you have a chance to go listen to the 911 call from this, it is, you always have... The ones that get, I guess the ones that get played more are the ones that are, it's the bad 911 callers or the dispatchers, and they almost sound bothered by the caller, I guess, or they don't, I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I can see that.
I know they have to be direct, to the point, get the information out.
Yeah, but depending on where they are too, sometimes I guess they can become desensitized to those things too.
That is true. But this one is the exact opposite. He was so good with her and so calm and so sweet. And that just, it sticks out to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really neat. So Jennifer Morey, this was taking place in Houston, Texas on April 15th, 1995. Jennifer Morey was a 25-year-old lawyer. She was super successful. She was doing her thing. She was moving into her own apartment for her first time by herself. And after work, her friends wanted to go for drinks. And at first she's like, no, I don't really want to go. I just want to go home. They talked her into it. She went out. She ended up having fun. She stayed out late. So she had a friend bring her to an apartment at about midnight. Complex is called Bayou Apartment Complex. I'm sorry, Bayou Park Apartment Complex. And with her being young and living on her own for the first time, she picked this apartment complex for a very specific reason. Like, the security was top tier. They had an 8-foot fence around the whole property. They had 24-hour security. Like, it had the whole nine yards as far as security. It was supposed to be the best of the best. And that's the whole reason why she picked this apartment. So she gets home. She walks in, she locks her door like she normally does her nightly routine, and goes to bed, which I'm not like that. When we go out and I come home, I sleep in my makeup. I pretty much change my clothes, sleep in my makeup, go to bed. Mm-hmm. I'm the worst when it comes to washing your makeup off or doing your whole nightly routine. That's not me. That's not me. So she goes to bed, she locks her door, or I'm sorry, she locks her door and then goes to bed. That'd be a little weird.
Yeah.
And let's see here. I've told this story so many times that I'm just kind of going off memory and I don't want to miss anything. Mm-hmm. The security company that this apartment used was called Pinkerton Security. It was a really well-known security company that dates back to 1850. So it's been around a while.
That makes sense.
It was founded by Alan Pinkerton.
So that would be like the horse and carriage time whenever that was developed. And I think I've heard of the Pinkerton.
Yeah. And I'll tell you,
I've heard about that already.
I'll tell you some history on it too. Okay. Cause it kind of puts it in perspective of how long this security company's been around. It was originally called the Pinkerton National Detective Agency, later being known as Pinkerton. Some of the fun facts that I was talking about: Alan Pinkerton was a Scottish immigrant and former barrel maker in Chicago. He provided private detective services and security, especially to railroads that were frequently targeted by criminals at that time. Pinkerton hired the very first female detective in 1856, which I thought that was really
cool. That's pretty progressive.
Her name was Kate Warren. She was a widow, and she was so well respected by Pinkerton that when she died in 1868, he actually had her buried in his family's plot. President Abraham Lincoln hired Pinkerton agents to protect him during a covert train trip to Washington, D.C. in 1861. They are credited with stopping an assassination against Lincoln in Baltimore. Their motto was, "We never sleep." And that's actually, and their logo was an unblinking eye, which is actually the origin story of Private Eye, or the original, the origin. Let me try that again. Their logo was an unblinking eye, which is the origin of the term Private Eye.
Interesting. Okay.
That's better. They were also the first to come up with mugshots and databases. And so they were, I mean, like you said,
they were the very,
very first.
They were the pioneers of that
exactly.
type of technology, yeah. I guess.
Jennifer Morey got to her apartment after ending her night with her friends, locked all her doors and her windows, and very quickly went to sleep. About 4 a.m., she was awoken to feeling pressure on top of her and then felt pressure around her neck.
I know somebody else that's been woke up like that before, and nothing was there.
Who?
You.
I think we mentioned it on the last episode. I have some dreams.
You and those dreams.
And I sleepwalk, and I sleep talk. And what's crazy is I'm not fully asleep, and I'm not fully awake. So I'll be up acting out what's going on in my dream, but it's very, very real to me. Very real. Like, I'll see people in our house, and I'll go and start talking and walking or following them. I'll see snakes.
Mm-hmm. If somebody ever does walk into our house, you're going to scare them.
I've seen babies crawling on the ceiling. What else have I seen? I seen a hobo trying to take our child, and I went to go fight him.
There's so many, it's hard to say, but the snake one is the one that sticks out the most, because I woke up with you sitting on my chest.
It happens. I have some wild, wild dreams, and stress and being overly tired triggers it horribly. So, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Well, that wasn't the case for Jennifer. So she woke up, she felt pressure on her chest, and she felt pressure around her neck. At first, she's wondering, is she just dreaming? But she quickly realizes there is actually a man straddling her with a knife to her throat.
Wow.
He was holding her down and trying to rip her underwear off. She immediately starts to fight, trying to get him off of her, knowing that he was there trying to assault her. While she's trying to fight him off, the man says, just stop moving, Jennifer.
Oh, wow.
So he knows her.
So he knew who she was.
He knew who she was. Y'all, I'm tired, okay? Bear with me. Which I completely caught her off guard because she kind of recognized his voice, but she couldn't figure out where it was coming from or where she knew it from.
I could only imagine being in that situation and trying to determine
who that person is. You're half asleep. But while she's starting to wake up more, she still can't figure out who this guy is. So she just begins screaming as loud as she can and trying to fight him off of her. She screams so loud that she wakes up 15 of her neighbors, and not one single one called the cops.
Wow, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Could you imagine being one of those people and then all of a sudden knowing what actually happened?
Yeah.
And thinking, I could have done something.
Which is kind of that time that I was staying at that hotel and I called you in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
I was dead asleep and I woke up to hearing screaming and yelling and hearing like a boom, boom, boom sound over and over. And so as I came to, I thought I was dreaming and having one of my dreams. And I laid there for a minute. And once I realized it wasn't a dream, I panicked. I mean, it's scary. My adrenaline went up. My anxiety went up. So I called Josh and I was like, because I was by myself. I was a work trip. I was all alone. I called Josh and was like, hey, I don't know what to do. I'm scared. I think I need to call the front desk. Something was going on. And you just hear this, lack of a better term, like hitting sound. And a lady screaming, please stop. Don't. You're hurting me. So I called the front desk and reported it, but I couldn't tell which room it was coming from. I couldn't tell if it was above me or to the sides or where it was coming from. And then it stopped. And I was like, okay, it stopped. And they said, all right, we'll have somebody, you know, investigate, figure it out. So again, my anxiety was up. So I made Josh stay up at 3 o'clock in the morning on the phone with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it started again. But that time I could figure out it was coming from above me. And so I called the front desk again, said, hey, it's the room directly above me. And so they said, all right, we'll send somebody there immediately. And it went on for a few more minutes and then it got quiet again. And I didn't hear any more of the screaming or hitting, but I did hear some other strange sounds. I ended up asking the front desk, like, was everything okay last night? I reported it and they basically said, can't tell you anything. It's, I guess, an invasion of privacy or whatever they said. I don't remember. So I still don't know what happened, but being in that situation and hearing somebody screaming like that, I could not imagine just not calling the cops. It was scary.
Yeah.
So if you hear something, say something.
Yep.
Jennifer is fighting, screaming, doing everything she can to get this intruder off of her. Suddenly, he slices her from her right side of her eyebrow, down her cheek, over her nose, and then across her neck. So it started up here,
across her face,
went all the way down, back down her cheek, and then across her neck, all the way across. She thought that he had cut her eye out when it happened. She said it just felt like a hot waterfall. There was blood all over the man, her bed. It literally just started going everywhere. After he assaults her, he grabs her by the hair, drives her into the bathroom, and he slams the door and tells her, stay there or I will kill you. Quickly thinking, Jennifer grabs a wash rag and puts pressure on the wound on her neck because that's kind of where a lot of the blood was coming from. But here's the thing, her bathroom didn't have any locks on it. So she's terrified he's going to come back in there and finish what he started. So quickly thinking, she basically wedges herself between the bathtub and the door and puts her back up against the door and her feet against the bathtub and just wedges herself there. She's panicking, not knowing at this point, is he going to come back into the bathroom? Is he going to leave? She had no idea what was going on. So she just sits there quietly and listens, still bleeding profusely. She suddenly hears him zipping up his pants and she hears a door close and then it's silent. There's nothing but silence. She realizes that she needs to come up with a plan. She needs to figure out a way to dial 911, because again, she's scared she's gonna bleed to death. She doesn't know what to do. So she listens, it's still silent, so she's like, all right, it's either sit in here and bleed to death or take my chances and go see what's out there. So she gets up, she tries to turn the doorknob. She can't turn it. It won't move. Her hands have so much blood on them, she can't get a grip of the doorknob.
Wow.
So she cleans her hands off, she gets a towel, dries the doorknob. Now she can twist it. But she had jammed herself so tightly against it, she jammed the door shut. So now she can't get her door open. At that point, she said she basically started laughing because she thought, I fought this hard and I've made it this far, and now I've trapped myself in here and can't get out. I'm going to bleed to death. She said she didn't know what else to do, so she just kept fighting and she wanted to live. She wasn't going to end up bleeding out in the bathtub or in the bathroom. So she ends up washing grabbing the towel and just yanking on the door just over and over and is able to finally rip it open. She goes to her bedroom. She flips on the light. Lights are cut. They're not working. She runs to her landline because again, it's 1995. Landline's cut. Won't work. That's a horror movie. Like that's almost, it's one of those things where if you hear that, or you see that on TV, it's like, okay, yeah, like that's gonna happen. It's just like one thing after another after another. It's very cinematic.
There's a lot of stuff that goes on like that horror movies are based off of as
Yeah,
well, so.
that's true. So she does have a cell phone, even though it's 1995 with her job, she had to have a cell phone. Thank God it was charged. She went, she grabbed it, she ran back to the bathroom. She dials 911 and the dispatcher, Richard Everett, just started his first shift at 4 a.m., and he's the one that takes the call. And this is the part that gives me chills when you listen to the 911 call, because she basically immediately goes into everything that happened to her, and then she just starts screaming, "He knows my name. He knows my name." So you could tell how bad that affected her with just him knowing her name and her not having any clue who he is. He instructs her to keep pressure on her wound, and he basically comforted her. She said he was able to keep her calm and calm down enough that she finally felt like she could think straight because she was just starting to panic. She said, "I wasn't thinking." He was finally able to keep me grounded and say, "Okay, we have a mission. Let's do this." He told her she was doing fine. He asked her if she had any other injuries, and she said the only one she knew was her neck. So he talked her through checking the rest of her body to ensure she wasn't cut anywhere else. And luckily she wasn't. It was just the one, I say just, but it was just the one on her face and her neck. He tells her that the police are on their way. Stay with me. You're doing great. He even has to tell her not to talk too much, just give me quick answers because he didn't want her using too much of her air and her voice, not knowing how bad the injury was. About 15 minutes go by, and there's a knock on the door of the apartment. She tells Richard, "Hey, someone's knocking on my door. What do I do?" He said, "I just ask who it is." And so of course she yells, who's there? And that's when the voice on the other side says, "I'm Brian Gibson. I'm the security guard on duty." And he said he'd been attacked by a guy who jumped from her balcony and just wanted to make sure she was okay. He seen blood everywhere and that he had blood all over him from being attacked. He kept saying, "Let me in. Are you hurt?" So Jennifer tells Richard, "It's just a security guard checking on me. I think I should let him in." And Richard said, "Do not open that door." And she's confused because, again, she's panicking and it's like, it's a security guard. He's here to help me. I think I should let him in. He said, "Please just trust me. Something in my gut is saying something's not right. do not let him in that door. He said, we haven't even told your apartment building anything's happened yet. So just keep the door shut. She tells Brian, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm not letting you in. And then Brian became very insistent, saying, he's just the security guard. Let me in. All I want to do is help you. I seen someone. She says, no, she's fine. The cops are on the way. He says he knows he can hear the sirens. Just let me in. And at this point, she's kind of second guessing herself because, again, she's like, the cops are right here. He's a security guard. I should just let him in. But Richard is like, do not open that door. I just don't feel right about this.
That whole situation seems fishy to me, too.
Yeah. She said she trusted Richard, which I guess I'll go ahead and kind of say it now. Tori brought up a really good point. The second or third time when we were covering the story. She said, wait a minute. She heard a door close. She heard him zip up his pants and heard a door close.
Mm-hmm.
But this security guard is saying, I seen him jump from your balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Jennifer's not thinking about that. She's just trying to survive at this point. So I was like, yeah, that's a good point. She said she trusted Richard. He was the only safety that she had at this point. Although she was starting to fade in and out of consciousness and was really starting to worry about the blood loss.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically spraying everywhere at this point, and she began panicking. And he said, please just hold tight. Stay with me. Listen to my voice. The police are right there on your street. I'm watching them pull in. Just please hold on. And while Richard's trying to keep Jennifer calm, Brian begins knocking on the door even harder, demanding to be let into her apartment. She's feeling faint, like she's about to pass out, and Richard said he is watching the police. They're almost there. Please, just hold on. And at that point, she can finally hear the sirens, and the knocking stops. The police pull in, and Brian meets the police outside. The security guard meets the police outside. He has a wound that's bleeding on his right hand. He seems to be disheveled. There's blood on his face, all over his uniform. He tells the police he was making his rounds around the apartment complex and seen a man jump from Jennifer's second floor balcony. The man immediately attacked him when he began trying to engage with the intruder. They wrestled around, and Brian was able to get him to the ground when the intruder cut him with the knife and was able to get away and run towards the woods. Brian said he knew the guy jumped from Jennifer's apartment, so he ran in to check on her because he was very worried that she might be hurt. The cops thanked him for the information, told him to sit tight. They've got to get to Jennifer and check on her. By this time, it's almost 6 a.m., so the sun's just starting to rise. There's dew all over the grass. So some of the other officers went to go look at where the intruder supposedly jumped from the window, and there's no disturbance in the grass. Dew is untouched. There's nothing showing that a whole scuffle went down. There's no blood, nothing. So the police are kind of like you. They're like, something's not adding up here. Something's kind of fishy.
Trust your gut.
Trust your gut, 100%. So the police go back and they begin to question what's really going on. By this point, the other police officers have made it inside of Jennifer's apartment and are able to get her in an ambulance to the on her way to the hospital. On the way, they found out that the cut to her cheek and neck missed her jugular vein by just a couple of millimeters.
Wow.
The cut was so deep that doctors could not figure out how the nerves that control her face movements were not severed. The cut also hit her right eye, but miraculously missed her eyeball. So he did not cut her eye out.
So just the eyelid probably.
Yeah, the eyelid and like her eyebrow. And I'll have to show you pictures. She is an absolutely stunning woman. Like, she is beautiful. And whoever her plastic surgeon is, you can't even tell anything happened. Like, there's nothing. She had also been wearing a gold chain that her mother had given her as a gift. And if she wouldn't have been wearing that, they believe that the cut would have went through her larynx.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She said that there were a series of little miracles that kept her from dying. Cops start searching the apartment at this point, and there's blood everywhere. Literally every everywhere in that apartment. What do you know? They also find a bloody knife, one glove, a pair of men's underwear, and a Pinkerton security hat. So he basically just left a trail of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it makes you wonder. So at this point, you already know who did it. I mean, it's obvious.
I mean, you kind of already got to the gist of that from him returning to the scene of the crime.
But that's what's crazy is if he... Okay, so why is he returning? Was it to get his stuff? Well, why was he in such a rush to... Why didn't he take it with him?
He was coming back to tie up loose ends,
but probably. That's the thing, though. Then why did he leave in the to begin with? Why didn't he
Maybe he got spooked?
I don't know. That's what's crazy to me. And I never could find the answer of why did he go back to the apartment exactly.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was going to... I think he was going to finish the job.
I think so, too, yeah.
And gather the rest of his evidence. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, you stupid criminal.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're stupid, but...
And maybe there was something that he had to go take care of in the meantime. With him being the security guard, maybe he had to show face somewhere, make a round or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It just doesn't... It doesn't add up.
No, it does.
Stay stupid. Keep getting caught. So the police go back to Brian and they tell him to take off his shirt. He immediately begins saying, I'm just here to help her. I was attacked. And the police tell him again, remove your shirt, bud. Like, we want to look. So he does. And what do you know? He has scratches and defensive wounds all over his body. Not only that, but his pubic hair was completely shaven. So premeditated, most likely.
Maybe he's just a freak.
Oh, my God. He also didn't have a security hat.
Hmm.
They believe this was all premeditated. They also believe when he returned to the apartment to help her, he was there to grab, like we were talking about, grab things and finish her off. Being the security guard also explains how he was able to get into her apartment and call her by name.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the crazy part. So, I mean, this whole story is crazy. Like, how she fought him off and how she survived is crazy. But wait until you hear about this. So, after looking into his history, they discovered that he had many complaints against him in the last 3 years, and he shouldn't have even been hired to work as a security guard. His name was Brian Wayne Gibson, 26 years old, and started working for Pinkerton in 1992. He'd been there for 3 years. He was reassigned twice during those 3 years for basically getting into arguments with people. His final reassignment came from a construction site. After a client complained about him using the client's vehicle without permission. So I guess he just got in her car and left and didn't.
That's a strange thing to do.
Yeah. This guy's not, I don't think he's.
He ain't all there.
No, he's all there. Lights are on, nobody's home. No charges were filed against him, and Pinkerton just transferred him to the night shift at the Bayou apartment complex. Jennifer had said that she believed he was a sexual criminal that was put into a situation like a kid in a candy shop. He used that opportunity to pick his favorite flavor of candy, and she was it, basically.
That's a strange way to put it.
Jennifer ended up filing a lawsuit against the company. And to get ready for the lawsuit, Jennifer and her lawyer also found out there were several other shady security guards that worked for Pinkerton as well. Between 1991 and 1995, there were a total of 130 guards that had been convicted of felonies that they had hired.
Wow.
In August of 1992, a 15-year-old girl was walking home from a movie. A car cut her off, and according to witnesses, he was wearing a Pinkerton uniform. He flashed some type of badge at her, handcuffed her, and put her in his car. He then drove her out to the desert, where he would then rape her and shoot her in the back of the head. Ready for this? Girl survived.
Wow.
She lived. And she ended up basically crawling to a highway and getting herself help, and she survived. The guy was then arrested to
You having a stroke?
The guy was then arrested for attempted murder and ended up serving life in prison.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. He was, in fact, a Pinkerton security guard. And if Pinkerton had just done a normal background check, they would have seen that Kenneth Wayne Scott was a parolee on federal firearm charges.
So they had no background checks on these people.
He had several prior convictions in Florida and would have been easily... I quit. He had several prior convictions in Florida and would have been easily accessible if they would have just looked into it.
Mm-hmm. And probably would have been immediately disqualified.
January 1993, a few guys were drinking and decided, let's go rob a convenience store. 59-year-old clerk named Lenora Tetzman and a customer named Todd Thompson, who is 20 years old, were both shot to death. They linked the crime to 20-year-old Christopher Jones, who was one of the shooters. He also worked for Pinkerton as a security guard and then was sentenced to life in prison. So Pinkerton, they did have a lot of great employees, but they royally fucked up during those years on hiring people.
Yeah, they did.
It is documented that it is difficult to keep tabs on security guards with an average turnover rate of 50%.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Pinkerton did do an overhaul on their hiring process after all this. Thank God.
I would have too.
Jennifer's lawyer said that it was a failure in background checks and inadequate psychological screenings that were at fault. Brian Gibson had lied about his employment application. So the guy that attacked Jennifer, he had lied on his application. They were supposed to have employment stability in a minimum of a high school diploma or GED. He didn't have either.
You also got to think about the time, too. I guess they probably didn't have the access to the technology that we do now.
Yeah. So you can just kind of BS your way through it.
Probably so. And they probably, it was probably an expensive process.
Yeah. So unless if there's any red flags, they just kind of.
So I could see how something like that might slip through the cracks then.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not acceptable.
Yeah. Especially with it being a security company. Like, okay, if you're hiring a cashier or something, okay, maybe not good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a security guard.
Somebody that's in charge of keeping people safe.
Yeah, that's not where you take your shortcuts.
Yeah.
No one ever verified what he put on the application, and Brian didn't. He didn't have any of those things. When he was hired, they used the Minnesota Multi Basic inventory for psychological testing designed to determine character flaws. The test was supposed to have 500 plus questions. They decided, let's give him the shortened version of the test, and it only had 168 questions. So the psychologist that actually worked for Pinkerton said that the short version doesn't give you everything. It doesn't have enough data to make an informed decision on an employee. This gives a false sense of security to clients. So he knew. He's the one that would give the test, and he knew it wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he said during the trial.
Yeah, and I can see how that would have happened with them having such a high turnover rate.
Yeah.
Things being as expensive as they probably were. There's a lot of things that kind of snowballed. Like a
perfect storm.
Yeah. And that ultimately cost that girl and several other women, obviously, their lives and potential livelihoods.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure she still, to this day, has some type of PTSD from that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'll cover some of that. But she's a badass. She totally turns it around.
Yeah. Well, she survived. Of course she's a badass.
Yeah. So now they use what's called the Stanton Survey. In the hiring process, it's supposed to give better results when hiring future employees. Brian was arrested and was only given 20 years for attempted murder and is currently on parole in Texas. So because he sucks at what he was doing and didn't succeed, that 20 years, that's it. That's crazy. 2 weeks after he attacked Jennifer, she moved out of the apartment. She did move in with her mother, and she still felt unsafe. She even had a hard time leaving her mother's side for some time due to the paranoia that she was experiencing. She would call 911 at the slightest noise and would stay up all hours of the night just patrolling the house, just waiting for somebody to break in. Her family rallied around her. They helped her process the ordeal and helped her with starting her journey of healing. She would become the director of trauma support services in North Texas. She began public speaking.
Public
That is not
spankings.
what she did. That is not it. She began public speaking about her experience and how she got through it. She let her. Oh my God. She later got married, and Richard, the dispatcher, attended her wedding, and they have remained friends. Her husband encouraged her to open her own law firm that specializes in family law in Fort Worth, Texas. And she said, quote, "I have a theory that Jennifer Maury, that existed on April 15th, 1995, died. A new one had to come out after that." And that's the story of Jennifer Maury.
What a powerful story.
I know. That, like I said, that one, I don't know how to say this without being like insensitive, but I love her story. Like, it's one that has always stuck with me ever since I heard it, and just hearing how she fought and continued to fight and then just totally flipped it around and made it her own
Made
again.
her trauma her victory.
So, and she's, I can't remember if I saved this on here or on my phone. Let me see if I've got a picture of her, because she really is just gorgeous. No, it's on my phone. I'll have to show you after. So, yeah.
Well, that was an interesting story.
To survive, I figured you'd be all right with survival.
I mean, it's sad to think that people have to go through things like that.
Yeah. And something like that to happen, and then you see all of the shortfalls, like with the security company, and it was going on and kept going on, but it took something like that to.
Just one person's decision to cut corners
Yeah.
cost all kinds of things,
Yeah. Yeah.
wreaked havoc on multiple people's
Yeah,
lives,
on all of them. So,
just from a shortcut.
yeah,
That's
very sad.
crazy.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for tonight. We're gonna beg for you guys to like, comment.
Subscribe.
Look at you go. Share. Give us 5-star ratings.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Tell your auntie. Your uncles.
Have you told them about your stickers
Yeah,
yet?
well, I posted on Facebook. We've done this 3 times, okay? I forget what we've done and what we haven't done. So we have new stickers, guys. I love them. We're going to keep them on us, and we're going to hand them out if we recommend to anybody. And we're trying to figure out like maybe a giveaway, or like maybe we thought maybe if they keep. Have like a contest. So if they're liking, subscribing, and rating, and kind of do like a monthly contest, and maybe put like a little basket together for them or
Do
something.
like a VIP basket.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of fun. So let us know your ideas, and if you just want a sticker, or if you have any ideas that we can do, then let us know. And we appreciate you guys being patient. Like I said, it's supposed to be posted yesterday. We're recording tonight. I still have to edit everything and get it posted, but our baby turned, well, he turns 10 on Wednesday, but we celebrated him this weekend. So he got his bicycle that he's been wanting.
We all got a little sunburnt.
We all got very sunburnt. Josh made us some hamburgers and hot dogs, and we had fun. So
It was a good time.
can't believe our baby's double digits, gonna be double digits now.
How's that make you feel?
Makes me sad. All right, guys. Well, I guess that's it for this week. Until next week, check your closets, light your candles.
Forget to check under your bed.
Ooh. Bye.